your products did very well.
The time I sold it, Microban was the number one antimicrobial brand in the industry, and Unsmoke was the number one, you know, odor removal restoration brand.
You are hearing the voice of Property Restoration Royalty. This is Cliff, the Z-Man Zlotnick, on the Diojo Podcast.
They tried to stop us.
May not be aware, but Cliff has had his hands in, on, and around many of the resources that are prevalent within property restoration history, including being an early member of what has become the Restoration Industry Association, and what we're talking about in particular with they tried
to stop us.
His product Microban, which was one of the leading antimicrobials of the time. If you were in water damage, you had Microban on the truck.
Enter an audio-visual experience like no other.
Underground rap at its realest.
Did you interact with Ed York all that much?
Some.
PropertyRestorationHistory.com. So
yeah, it actually wasn't great, but
Cliff has a unique perspective from being there on the front lines as the industry was forming. So we're going to pick his brain on a few characters from property restoration history, including founding father Lloyd Weaver. We're going to talk, as mentioned, about a character who actually started the IICRC, Ed York.
Brilliant person, a creative person, and a self-destructive person.
And also following up a clip we released earlier on Marty King. So we'll be talking to Cliff and a few others to get to continue to whet your appetite for property restoration history.
Helping you shorten your dang learning curve.
We couple this conversation with Cliff with some clips from the Diojo Podcast episode 60, which included John Downey and Ken Larson, as they offer some additional perspective on the formation of the industry and standards and some of the historical characters. Well, that's super interesting to hear you guys say that because, but you know, we get from time to time, whether it's online or in some of the association gatherings and those kinds of things, where people are feeling like sometimes they're walking on eggshells or can't fully express themselves to ask honest questions.
You all were there when it was trial and error, right? Exactly like you said, like, oh, let's try this, let's try this. Let's test our theories, right? Let's ensure that what we're trying is working.
They tried to stop us.
And so I wanted to revisit a portion of that with Cliff. And like I said, from the episode 60. So there's a few clips there that we close out this episode with that I think are good refreshers and understanding kind of where we've come from and where we're going.
Or there's times when people are displaying what they're doing. They're trying to learn, right? And maybe they made a stupid mistake, mistakes that all of us have made. And then they just get blasted. And it's like, maybe they're just making an honest mistake.
What would you say you do here?
The Diojo Podcast.
Before we get started, we would love to thank our sponsors. Please check them out and let them know you heard about them on the Diojo Podcast. We've got the Restoration Industry Association, RIA. Office Services by Brandy. Restoration Technical Institute. iRestore Restoration Software. IICRC, the Institute of Inspection, Cleaning, and Restoration Certification. Thank you all. Check them out. And again, let them know the Diojo sent you. Your products did very well.
They tried to stop us. At the time I sold it, Microban was the number one antimicrobial brand in the industry. And Unsmoke was the number one, you know, odor removal restoration brand.
We are talking with Cliff Zlotnick, the one of the founding fathers of property restoration history, as outlined in this penultimate article from Pete Consigli, the March 2007 Cleaning and Restoration, Founding Fathers of Restoration. And he names Cliff Zlotnick. There he goes, a young Cliff Zlotnick.
PropertyRestorationHistory.com.
So you got Lloyd Weaver, Martin L. King, who we introduced last episode.
Well, Cliff Zlotnick, who's also an industry icon, wrote four words. Igniter of an industry.
Cliff Zlotnick and Claude Blackburn. So Cliff, one of his claims to fame was Microman.
I put that shit on everything.
And I can remember, I've been in the industry since about 2002. And when you were, if you were a water damage technician, there was Microban. You had to have Microban in your truck. A lot of carpet cleaners as well, for cleaning, antimicrobial, disinfection. It did it all. And I think the motto of every, I think it was before Frank's Red Hot had the motto, we put that Microban
on everything.
But the Microban that we see on TV or that's in like the shopping carts at Target and that kind of thing.
My Microban 24 doesn't just sanitize and stop. It keeps killing bacteria for 24 hours.
That's not your product and you're not making a little spiff off of all of those things.
They tried to stop us. I don't know. Did I ever tell you that story? No,
you did. Yeah.
The product had actually come out in 1962 and it had been patented in like 50 different countries. And they began calling it Microban. We bought the Microban products and there were two of them, X580 one was called Microban Hospital Spray.
Name. So we're going to get to that part, but he sold his companies to Legend Brands. But this is the same, this what it's now called MediClean, Pro Restore Antimicrobial MediClean Disinfectant. I'm looking at their Ramsco store. Shout out to Luke Drager and our support for our local networking group here in the Seattle area. We recently had it at their facility. So MediClean Disinfectant Spray Plus is now what it's called, but it's a mildicide, bactericide, fungicide, deodorant, and disinfectant antimicrobial formulated for remediation environments. And then the other one I think Cliff just mentioned is MediClean X590. It is also a mildicide, bactericide, fungicide. So
this is in the 80s?
We bought it in 81, I believe. My father, brother, and I bought it in 81. The inventor of putting antimicrobial products in plastics, I don't remember the guy's name now. This guy supposedly had numerous patents. He's one of these people like Edison or whatever that had hundreds and hundreds of patents. And their original product was the chair rail that would be used in hospital hallways. And they impregnated that. They thought we were infringing on their trademark. It turned out that we filed an action to revoke their trademark. And then it turned out that they allowed us to register our trademark. That meant that there were two Microban trademarks. There was ours and there was theirs.
Hate is because they ain't us.
And what we did is we divided up the turf. They were plastics additives and we were disinfectants. Mm.
I think it's important not to assume that everybody knows what we're talking about. So we can throw around terms like cleaning, disinfecting, and sterilizing, antimicrobial, bactericide, disinfectant. We can use those. We think they may be synonymous, but there's actually terms and processes for each of those. So like this, what used to be Microban is now MediClean Disinfectant Spray Plus, is a water-based bactericide, fungicide, and deodorant all in one unique formula. Protects against germs and odor on virtually any surface. Antimicrobial action kills allergy and disease-causing germs, bacteria, fungi, mold, and mildew with one application that provides long-lasting residual protection. MediClean DSP is EPA registered for many decontamination applications, including sewage backups, removal of carcasses, etc. Kills germ-negative bacteria, the bacteria encountered in sewage backups and toilet overflow situations. Registered both for spray and fogging applications. Excellent for decontaminating textiles, mattresses, bedding, etc. Has no insecticidal capabilities. So there's always more information. You always need to read, the label, what it's designed. This here is ready to use. That means it's already been diluted, so we don't want to dilute it further. But something, if you're a technician and you haven't been shown this, or maybe you're new to management, it's always important to know the SDS labels, the safety data sheets. So you always want to look at, these should be readily available, whether it's on an app or in your trucks. You know, what happens if I get this in my eye? What happens if it's on my skin and it starts burning, or somehow I swallow it, ingestion or inhale it? That should be something that you would discuss as a team. But it's also important to understand there's a difference. We have an over-reliance sometimes on PPE. Well, I'm wearing a suit and goggles or a face mask, so I should be protected. But even prior to, PPE is your protection of last resort. So even prior to that is your engineering controls. So part of that is proper safety training, understanding the chemicals you're using, what their consequences can be, the proper applications, the proper dilution rates, and the improper applications. Like some products have bleaching agents in them. So if you're spraying down a carpet, all of a sudden you can change the color of the carpet, or you're spraying the wall and don't have a proper protection on, you know, that can drip down the wall and cause bleaching. But environmental controls for this one in particular ensure adequate ventilation, especially in confined areas. We found over the years, you know, some people were sensitive to different odors and those kinds of things in the chemicals. So that's why a lot of things have moved towards, you know, green friendly and low VOCs, volatile organic compounds.
And then I went to the UK and I found out that they were cheating, and I brought a shopping basket of products back, and I had to go to New York City to sign some papers, and my brother and our partner were already there a couple of days before. I remember my brother telling me that, you know, you're going to be surprised when you get it. I said, is it a good surprise or bad surprise? He says, I don't know, but you're going to be surprised. And, you know, I went up and there were, the floor was shared by two different companies. And one was the law firm where we had rented space to do the business closing. And the other was Microban International. And, you know, after a day or so, I got enough nerve to just walk in and introduce myself. And they asked me who I was. And I said I was with the other Microban. And
Mother of God.
You know, we started talking. And our we widened our turf and widened their turf. So they became built in instead of plastics additives, and we became liquid products or something like that.
It's important to know what you're talking about. I'm just going to pull up this clean table here. So cleaning, sanitizing, and disinfection, there's different definitions, but there's also what's important is what surfaces they're designed for. You know, because typically porous and non-porous, right? If the product's designed for steel tables and stainless steel surfaces in a hospital versus the scenarios we come across in water damage, you know, drywall, various wood composites and those kinds of things is very different, right? So cleaning is defined as physically removing all dirt and contamination, oftentimes using soap and water. The friction of cleaning removes most germs and exposes any remaining germs to the effects of a sanitizer or disinfectant used later. So this was discussed a lot with COVID, where general cleaning prior to the application of the preventative solutions. Sanitizing, reducing germs on an inanimate surfaces to levels considered safe by public health codes or regulations. Sanitizing may be appropriate for food service tables, high chairs, toys, and pacifiers. Disinfecting is destroying or inactivating most germs on any inanimate object, but not bacterial spores. Disinfecting may be appropriate for diaper tables, door and cabinet handles, toilets, and other bathroom surfaces. I just pulled this off of naeyc.org. It's important to know what your product designed for. Is it a cleaning product? Are you doing a cleaning process? Is it a disinfecting product? Are you doing a disinfecting process? Is it a sanitizing product? Are you doing a sanitizing process? And some products can be used for all three, but there's different protocols and steps to follow for each.
And a lot of that can result relate to the dwell time too, the dilution, the dwell time, and the manual removal, as well as the applications. So
we actually formed a joint venture to try to do licensing of liquid products. At that time, they didn't have any disinfectant technology. They just had built-in technologies. But I think they were starting to work on some. It turned out that the company ended up, when I sold the Legends, I agreed to sell the trademark back to Microban.
We put that Microban
on everything.
Essentially got two checks. I got one check for the Microban trademark that allowed them to consolidate the brand. But what I had done is I wanted to preserve the relationship, that I had had with Legend Brands and so on and so forth. So they were going to be able to continue doing everything that they were doing on a royalty basis forever.
Oh,
and what happened was, they ended up going to court. Microban won because they stopped using the name.
Dang. So, I mean, a legacy product, right? That keeps going.
Not anymore in this industry.
One of the things I love about having been able to read and hear Cliff Zlotnick speak, write, and participate in the industry. Like I said, when I was early on, I would gobble up, listen on the internet radio to IAQ radio and read trade publications like IE Connections and those kinds of things. And now having been able to sit down with him a few times, how practical he tries to be, just assessing things and looking for, I don't want to diminish it, say like the lowest common denominator. I don't think that would be an improper reiteration of how a lot of his mind thinks is, a lot of the most basic ways, the old ways, are still grounded in, when you can trial, they're grounded in trial and error. The results prove themselves. And, sometimes innovation can be helpful, but sometimes innovation can be prohibitive. So you really have to kind of think through, what does this scenario need? And even in the opening to IICRC, S500, S520, it talks about deviations may be appropriate. And so just technicians kind of saying, well, this is what it says, this is what we taught me in the class. I think as an intentional owner, a manager, and a restorer, you always have to be asking, does this work? Does this fit in this situation? Is there something else I need to be doing that I'm not accounting for? And as new ideas and concepts come to the table, a lot of them are repeats of old ideas that maybe did or didn't work or needed to be tweaked or fit certain scenarios. But one of the things that Cliff talks about in relation to cleaning is the solution to pollution is dilution. And so, whenever there is an issue, say sewage or those kinds of things, I can think back to how I learned how to do mold remediation as opposed to the way I hear some people are doing it now, and it was manual, right? Just you physically remove the three-dimensional growth, and you try to get at the roots and those kinds of things. And the same thing with over-reliance maybe on what some people would call foo-foo juice, which is funny talking about Microban because people really did like – did you hit it with Microban? And that's very common nowadays to, you're trying to cover yourself and make sure it's a last resort though, right? Like we just still physically be removing whatever we can remove, cleaning and all of those physical mediums. And then, the disinfectants and the solutions and those kinds of things come after, in my humble opinion, rather than just spraying something on it and calling it good. So, but the solution to pollution is dilution. We need to get the icky out and more of the clean in. And so it's funny how we are. One of the courses actually I took for fire damage cleaning was with Restorex, I believe, on smoke. No, RS. Sorry, Restoration Services Academy, RSA. And that was, he was the instructor in that course was promoting the concept of, you know, we know how to dry things out. Why don't we use water more often when we're dealing with fire damage situations, you know, even pressure washing materials and surfaces and those kinds of things. And then, you know, so diluting the contaminants and then drying things out. Obviously, you have to control that, you know, and make sure you know where that water is going and those kinds of things. But pretty interesting, very thoughtful, but also very practical in his approach to so many things.
But it made no sense. You know, at the time I sold it, Microban was the number one antimicrobial brand in the industry. And Unsmoke was the number one, you know, odor removal restoration brand. And they changed both names. You know, it's like, you know, it's worse than New Coke. At least they were called Coke. Made no sense. But
I love hearing these little pieces of history. There's always something you learn from other entrepreneurs and their experiences in getting their products and services out there. And boy, going full circle for Cliff from starting things up, getting them out there, training people on how to use things, and then selling. And he mentions Claude Blackburn, whom we've had on the podcast, was the creator of DryEase, which is one of the most recognized product manufacturers in our industry, drying equipment and those kinds of things. So pretty wild. And a lot of the icons of the industry, the founding fathers, they participate in the Restoration Industry Association.
Okay, what's the summary, Pete?
What summary is that, John?
Of the 76th RIA convention in Reno, Nevada, the Vegas of Northern Nevada.
Yeah, well, it's the biggest little city in the world is their tagline.
We changed it.
Reno, we changed it, yeah.
That's where I met several of them and continue to get additional pieces. So I would encourage you, this is, I mean, RIA is a sponsor, but this is just me talking as a restorer. I always learn something, always look forward to hanging out with my friend Gordy Powell.
Overall, it's just a grand experience. Yeah. The connections that are made.
Yeah.
The more importantly, the relationship that developed from last year that advanced to this year. The big takeaway is just the experience of what it brings to you as a business owner.
Yeah.
There's the educational aspect. There's always a new tweak that the vendors are bringing in to where you think you cut off on everything.
Yeah.
But there's something new coming down the pike.
Yeah.
The Whiskey Crew, if you enjoy whiskey or just hanging out, this year we hung out with several people. But to help get us there and continue to producing content, here's one of our sponsors. The IICRC is a sponsor of the podcast, if you can believe it or not. So here's a little message from them on what they do.
Hi there. I'm Gavin, the lead certified firms coordinator here at IICRC. I'd like to show you how to grow your business for 2022. As an IICRC certified firm, you can get verified in real time with a certified firm digital badge through Credly. Expand your visibility with a listing on the IICRC Global Locator, reinforce your credibility with Google verification, and access exclusive live monthly webinars for continuing education credit. Visit IICRC.org today to see what you need to apply. Our team is ready to process your applications and get you set up for success.
I've got obviously always a lot of things I'd like to talk to you about. I recorded with the boys, so the Weaver boys. So I'd like to put eventually kind of weave that together to do an episode on Lloyd.
PropertyRestorationHistory.com.
Because I remember I took his class, you know, because that's, you know, he taught me how to do water damage. You know, I remember taking the class and I remember different people would like ask him questions. And, you know, like one of the questions is, how do you know how many pieces of equipment, you know, you should put on the job? And he would say, well, it's directly proportional to the number of pieces of equipment that you have on your truck. And then someone will ask, well, how do you know when you have enough? He says, when you blow a fuse, you take one out. But I mean, if you think about it, it's very true, particularly how do you know if you have enough equipment? You know, you do want to dry as fast as you can. You do want to, you know, get as much energy change and drying capability and air movement as you can get. So, I mean, he was exactly right. And, you know, with what he did. And I'll tell you, John, you have all this three-day drying business. We used to guarantee we were going to dry these houses in 3 days, you know, beginning in the 70s, and we always did.
Yeah.
You know, we were able to do it.
PropertyRestorationHistory.com. I'm talking to Jim Thompson, I think that's next week.
Whoever stopped at a laundromat in Southeast LA and gone in to get quarters out of the fins of the dryer to get enough gas to get to a loss. I have.
Book, my life is one disaster after another.
Opportunity is that fleeting moment between everyone saying it can't be done and everyone doing it.
And you wrote the opening to his book, right? The introduction?
I did, yeah.
Any comments on Jim?
Here's something exciting to announce. LargeLossMarketing.com. Jim Thompson has put his 40 years of experience in disaster restoration, large loss industry, marketing and sales and production into a book. My life is one disaster after another. There it is.
The title is easy. I've had a plaque for many years in my office that said, life is one disaster after another. Have you ever stopped at a laundromat in South?
I think Jim's story is very interesting. And, you know, when Lloyd and I met him, you know, he was a Restorix franchisee of ours in the St. Louis area. And when we, you know, Lloyd and I went out there, and I remember Jim's truck, I could see from one side clear through the other, and it wasn't through windows. I mean, he actually had rust holes on both sides, you know, both sides of the truck. But, you know, Jim was a quick learner, and Jim is the best restoration salesperson I know. I mean, he's really unbelievable at it because I think he has empathy. He gets people to trust him. You know, if I had a large loss and, you know, he's probably the guy that I would want to make the, you know, the sales presentation. He's just really, really good at it. And I think technically,
I dedicated the book to Cliff and Lloyd, you know, said around the clock, around the country, versus around the clock, around the block. After Hurricane Michael or whatever in Panama City, I'd see truck after truck of guys I've trained that became regional players, and then they became national players. my thing is, I'm going to knock out any freaking loss in the country, and I knocked out the biggest of the biggest of the biggest, and got her done, got paid, and got the hell out of there. Opportunity is that fleeting moment between everyone saying it can't be done and everyone doing it. Started with a Sears wet vac and a tri-jet fogger, for gosh sakes. $35 for my answering service was a burden, you know.
Okay, so can we pause there for a minute? Because that question gets all asked all the time. What equipment is essential for me to start my business? And, you know, on the social medias, it's, you know, you need this laundry list of things. And you just said it, right? You need a friggin' shop vac and a spray bottle, right?
Shop vac and a spray bottle, I'll tell you what. You know, said around the clock, around the country, versus around the clock, around the block. Cliff Slotnick wrote the foreword to it. I appreciate it.
PropertyRestorationHistory.com.
You know, you heard all these great things about Marty King and so on and so forth. My relationship with him was significantly different than most people's relationship with him.
With Marty King in particular?
Oh, yeah.
We could do a whole show, and we should, on Marty alone. But what are some of his contributions?
In some ways, I would describe Marty as the anti-Ed York. he was controlled, precise, whereas Ed was frequently out of control, and as I said, the, you know, an idea a minute.
You know, I think when it came to general industry knowledge, he was probably the best general industry knowledge person. I think he knew a little about more things than anyone else. He was an excellent technical writer. You know, maybe the best I've ever known. And he was also very concise. Brevity, he just used it brilliantly. He never said anything more than really needed to be said. I think he was good at making people think.
One of the early individuals that restorers could look to as a model. Hmm. You see, you know, we were just emerging as an industry, and it's always good to have mentors or people that you can look to as a target and say, he's going in the same direction I want to go. That's the guy I'm going to not necessarily follow, but I'm going to listen carefully and learn from. And I think that he presented a fine model for that purpose. Now, he wasn't always right. Let's just be really honest here, okay? Yeah. And not surprising that he wasn't always right. It's a new industry. Mistakes were going to be made. But did we learn from them and modify? I think that we did. And I think that Marty was one of those individuals that asked those really tough questions.
Hey, there was a good question from a contractor on backlog. Pardon the audio on this one. This is, from time to time, I take a walk. And I even take my dog on the walk. And my dog really likes listening to me talk about property restoration. And sometimes the portal through which I record that is for TikTok. I actually like it because currently the longest is you can do a 3-minute video, or at my level. And so it forces you to try to be a little more concise with what you're trying to convey. So here's, we're breaking up. Who wants to hear from Cliff Zotnick when you can hear from John Eikens from Dojo Podcast? Is backlog an indicator that you need to hire more people? Maybe. Oftentimes, if you're getting busier than your capacity, one of the things you should first be asking is, are we busy doing the right things? Profitability. So if we're getting busy, and part of our strategy has been charging lower prices, or we've been thinking, man, maybe we should be raising our prices, that's a great time to say, wait a minute, have we been profitable? Have we been taking on the right clients? Are we doing the right projects that are getting us towards our goals? Profitability. The other thing that we want to look at is our cycle times. So do we have backlog because we're slow or inefficient at producing the work that we currently have? Profitability. Of course, to be able to be objective about any of this, we need some data. We need some metrics. Are you tracking where your leads are coming from? How many leads you're closing? Are you getting some data on those leads? What sources they're coming from? What areas you're working in? And who, if there's similarities in customer type, who has been the most effective or the most profitable. So for example, in our business, if we get a referral from a certain mitigation contractor in a certain area with a certain carrier, we want to know roughly what our average close rate and profitability is with those combined metrics. Just to give you a little more on this without all the heavy breathing, because I'm not currently walking right now, some of these topics and the mindsets and habits we also cover in my latest book, How to Suck Less at Estimating, Habits for Better Project Outcomes. We talk about challenging some of the concepts that we hold, testing our systems to see if they're producing the results that we want, and then looking at the system as a whole. From this book, you will get 6 resources to add to your intentional estimating toolbox. And if you don't like to read, we're working on a course that will be distributed through our sponsors and friends at Restoration Technical Institute by the same name. So speaking of the name, go to Amazon and just type in how to suck and see what comes up in the search engine. We put that microband
on everything.
Part of those metrics is, what are our average close rates for general categories of jobs? Maybe 10,000 or less, maybe 20,000 or less, 50,000 or less, etc. Whatever you want to break it into. Some people call this DIP, days in progress. So for example, if a lot of the majority of our jobs are taking over 90 days, if we add another project manager to this system, are we actually going to be more profitable, or just going to be repeating the same process that's gotten us to this point where we have backlog, maybe with jobs that we shouldn't have taken and then aren't all that profitable and we haven't been very effective with? To be clear, backlog is a great indicator. If you've got more work than you can handle, it's a great spot to be in, but you just want to ask a few more questions before you start drawing conclusions that maybe aren't based in reality. Get you some data.
PropertyRestorationHistory.com.
Did you interact with Ed York all that much?
Some.
So
yeah, it actually wasn't great. But
so, speaking of another fella, very innovative, but not without his rub. In this same period, we have Ed York forming the IICUC, which is the precursor to the IICRC.
I'll let Downey go first.
Well, I probably have the most affection for Ed, and I'm not sure he ever cared for me. But Ed York was the quintessential nonconformist, or better word is contrarian. And he consistently went against the grain. Basically, to begin with, when everybody, all the established people said shampooing carpet was the way, Ed was a guy not only promoting steam cleaning, not hot water extraction, but steam, as we were talking about it then. He did it in his typical, rather obnoxious way, very in your face, and he tried to be controversial. But he was a really good businessman as a contrarian. He wasn't a great businessman. I shouldn't even say he was a good businessman. He married well, and the woman he married had a much better sense of business than him. And he came up with the idea. He'd have I described him as a whirlwind of ideas. He'd come up with an idea a minute, and she would latch on to those that were good, and kind of direct him to developing those things. I mean, he was, there's the IICUC, there was the Society of Cleaning Technicians. Ken, you guys can correct me if I'm mistaken, but I think Steam Services.
No, he started Steam Services as well.
Was that the first, quote, superstore, distributor type superstore?
I know Pemberton was in business at that time because I bought my equipment from Lee. However, Lee put me in touch with Ed. That's how I found the Steam Services catalog. What Aramco and John thought to do, Ed was the first person to do that. Invest the money in that catalog and start circulating that catalog. And, what you did in CleanFacts. I mean, he had tips and chat. He had his own publication. He started DKI. I mean, the guy just had a lot of really, really big ideas that, today are worth just an absolute fortune. Brilliant person, a creative person, and a self-destructive person. Okay, because what he would do is he would pick fights with people, and you really couldn't fight back.
Yep.
So you and he would be like really, really good friends. Okay, and then all of a sudden, in tips and chat, he would. Do you know John Isaacson? He's really inauthentic and he can't be trusted and, he's not really a good guy. And I wonder what he has to say about that. And then I told you, he's like a coward, he doesn't say, it was unbelievable. He would just literally turn on anybody and everybody that was close to him for no reason. It's like a rattlesnake,
I didn't have a personal relationship with Ed, but I did. My fascination with Ed is that the IICUC, which is the IICRC today, was so closely associated with DKI in the earliest days. I just find that to be a really interesting connection.
His own training and certification body, right? Mm-hmm. Of his.
That's right.
You buy the stuff, you train on the stuff, you get certified on the stuff, and you get an association. He basically put the whole package together.
But I think, like John said, he was a whirlwind of ideas. And I think, you know, he'd have a great idea, and then he would think he'd have a better one and drop the first one, you know?
Actually, I recognized Ed as the quote-unquote clean facts person of the 20th century.
Right.
That's
right.
What I thought of him. I felt he was, and people may get the wrong idea. It wasn't that I thought he was the best guy in the industry in the 20th century. He was the most influential person.
PropertyRestorationHistory.com.
You know, the amazing thing is, just jumping up into today for a minute, a lot of times I'll tune into these different forums, Restoration Forum or whatever, and someone will pose a question. And undoubtedly, within minutes, five or six different people will post quoting IICRC standards or something from the training course or whatever, which is exactly what Ken said. This prescriptive mentality has become inbred. And I think it's very unfortunate for the industry that people don't think outside of the box, because I just see some very, very stupid, costly mistakes made that, you know, would have been prevented.
With the standard of care, but do not write into your contract that you're going to perform the work according to IICRC standards.
Are you sure?
It's not going to help you sell any jobs. It's going to marry you to these thick documents. They're hundreds of pages long. And all the plaintiff's attorney has to do is point to one sentence in there that you didn't strictly comply with, and they'll be able to shout about, you know, breach of contract.
That doesn't sound good.
You don't need that kind of headache.
Helping you shorten your dang learning curve.
And the amazing thing is, you really can't argue with these people. You know, if you try to correct them, they come back and they keep quoting the standard. And what happens is, it's almost like an inevitable argument that they just don't understand. Correct, but they can't be reasoned with. It's almost like political. It's technically, these people just don't get it, and they're doing something wrong. They're being told to do something wrong, and it just absolutely makes no sense, and it frustrates me to the point that I just don't engage with them. It's really not worth the headache.
We put that microband
on everything.
Before we get to the final closing thoughts of the episode, want to make sure that you are aware we are doing the third annual Diojo Socktember. The month of September, we are raising socks for local charities. This started with four teams in Washington, the Dang Sisters for Socks, Lindsay Ward with Reliable Content Services out of Tukwila, and Sarah Roberts, who's now with Service Master of Tacoma. They have won this thing 2 years in a row. We went from 5,500 socks total in 2020 to over 66,000 pairs of socks last year.
What you're doing is terrific.
With 39 teams in two countries. So we're looking to add teams, add countries. Our goal this year is to raise over 100,000 pairs of socks, assuming that last year wasn't an anomaly. But if you want to either join a team or start a local team that's designed to be a great team building, marketing, community outreach event, socks are one of the number one needs in local, homeless shelters, as well as we donated some to many schools have care closets, so youth and adult socks. Churches and other organizations that serve those that would be in need of socks. So it's a fun opportunity for you all to get your team together, get together with vendors and other contractors in your area, put a team together, get your Chamber of Commerce involved, get your B&I group involved, whatever you're involved with, get them involved, get them helping you to raise socks so you can try, if you will, to beat the Sisters of Socks because they are on the warpath for a three-peat this year. So thank you for all of you that have participated in the past. Look forward to having you compete this year. TheDojo.com/Socktember. The month of September is officially Socktember.
This outlet,
The Dojo podcast,
folks should be listening to you. What the industry needs is conversations like this.
Brands like no other. It's
terrific.
Well, that's super interesting to hear you guys say that, because you all were there when it was trial and error, right? Exactly like you said, like, oh, let's try this. Let's test our theories, right? Let's ensure that what we're trying is working. Or there's times when people are displaying what they're doing. They're trying to learn, right? And maybe they made a stupid mistake, mistakes that all of us have made, right? And then they just get blasted. And a lot of times it seems like maybe somebody, whether it's the standards or why are you so stupid? And it's like, maybe they're just making an honest mistake, right? There's a difference between an honest mistake, you know, I did something wrong, I didn't have all the information, or I didn't think it all the way through.
You know, I think it goes beyond that. And I think the primary area where I see this happen over and over and over again is crawl spaces. You know, sewage in crawl spaces or water in crawl spaces. And you see all of these high tech solutions and hooking up all these trailer mounted desiccants, you know, to dry out the crawl space. And to me, it's kind of unfathomable. And I think a lot of times, if you went back and thought, what would a poor farmer do in this situation? A lot of times that's the correct answer. You know, they don't need all this high technology and so on and so forth. And I think what happens is a lot of these guys have it. They may have a lease payment on that machine that month. So I got to use it. So there's a crawl space. So we're going to put it in, you know, whether we need it or not. But it just seems that that is the worst area, that people just don't think about stuff. You know, does the sewage really have to come out of there if you think about it? You know, maybe the liquid does, but you know, don't we fertilize the crops with it? You know, what would happen if you put down a waterproof barrier on top of it and that had a clean surface, and then we can kind of go up from there? But it just gets absolutely crazy, and a lot of this insurance companies aren't going to cover anyway. So, you know, the poor homeowner has to deal with it, but they do get blasted. You're absolutely right. And it's all about the standard. It says you have to do this, and it says you have to do that. And they make them feel really stupid for questioning. And that's what happens. You know, we get the creative thinkers out of the gene pool by embarrassing them publicly.
This is the stupidest thing I've ever heard.
You know, wanted me and Claude out, and at least he thought. So, you know, they could call this a new restore or something. You know, it made no sense, but